Check one.
Blog Talk Radio.
Our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're rooting, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Ropa Dope Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Wednesday night. You know, life got in the way a little bit last night, so I unfortunately couldn't do the show. Well, actually, it wasn't life. It was the internet. But that is life. That is life, especially for some people, right? We'll get into the boxing Twitter segment later, right? We'll talk about the internet, Twitter and whatnot. But anyway, we have a variety of things to talk about. First and foremost, Oleksandr Usyk defeats Anthony Joshua in style, cleanly, clearly. I don't care if the UK fanboys of Joshua, I shouldn't say UK fanboys because there's, you know, plenty of fanboys of all sorts, but Joshua, AJ fanboys who think, some of them actually think he won the fight. But anyway, that didn't happen. And that's okay. That's okay. You know, AJ was pretty positive after the fight. Some think it was too positive. That's kind of his style. But Usyk was the man of the hour. Like I said, he outclassed him. He just outboxed him. When they did have a little give and take, he made sure that he gave more than he took. he did have a sizable cut that I didn't realize was as bad as it was till after the fight. But, and, you know, of course, AJ talked about how his eye, it's kind of weird, man. His eye did start to swell, but when you see between rounds and even after the fight in the ring, and then especially, you know, at the presser, it was kind of like, I don't know. He said something that I'll talk about a little bit later after I'm done talking about the actual fight, but he talked about how from the ninth round and on, he couldn't see, which I just don't believe. I really don't, because your eye has to be pretty swollen not to see. As we know, that's a normal thing in boxing anyway. Not normal, you know, in normal life or whatever, but no way, dude. There's just no way. And after the fight, you know, when the doctor's trying to check his eye, it just seemed kind of weird. It just, I don't know. But anyway, Usyk got a great performance, and, you know, besides Usyk, you know, as the third Ukrainian heavyweight champion of the world, beyond the great performance he put on, the next question is, because it sounds like there's a rematch already in play, can Anthony Joshua make the adjustments he needs in the rematch to get the victory? And it's not like he's got to make like four different adjustments. No, he's actually just got to press behind the jab. I shouldn't say just has to, you know what I mean? Because it's not that easy. He did press a little bit, especially down the stretch. He did finally start going to the body. We'll talk about it in just a moment. Also, Manny Pacquiao made his retirement official. So, shouts out to you, Manny Pacquiao. Now, this is boxing. And, you know, there's exhibitions out there. There's, you know, coming out of retirement. So, I don't know if he's done. But I would love for him to. I know he didn't go out on a great note with the Ugas loss, but to be honest with you, I would love it, selfishly, if he would just, you know, not come back to the ring. I would really like that, man. There's no point, you know, anymore. But, you know, who knows? But either way, he gave us a great, great career, obviously. One spanning over, you know, the 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and now in the 20s even. He just fought, and he had a great performance in his second-to-last fight against Keith Thurman in the summer of 2019. So thank you very much, much appreciated, for Manny Pacquiao and all the great nights he gave us. I mean, I remember so many fight nights. I remember how amazed people were in the Hatton fight when he knocked him out screaming and then all of a sudden going silent because Hatton hadn't moved. You know, obviously the four fights with Juan Manuel Marquez, you know, all the stuff he did at featherweight before he even got to welterweight. So, you know, the guy obviously is a legend, and he will be missed. He is a one-of-a-kind fighter. And hopefully, like I said, this is an actual retirement. It's not like he's 30-something, 32 or 34, and, you know, I'm going to retire. You know, you think, I doubt it, you know. And especially how, well, I don't know if we could say popular the exhibitions are because most of them haven't been, but some of them have been greatly popular. I wouldn't doubt if he comes back, you know, again and fights. But who knows? He's got a lot on his plate running for president. I wish him luck. But, yeah, Manny Pacquiao. Calling it a day. You know, we'll talk about some of the undercard stuff as well. Of course, some current fight news, the ongoing Triller, Teofimo Lopez and George Kambosos thing is still, you know, now we've known that it was probably going to go to Barclays. It sounds like they got a date for it now, but they're having some issues with Kambosos, which I can't blame either of these fighters having issues of how this thing. Could you imagine trying to make weight under this circumstance? I mean, we know that Teofimo has some problems making weight. He's admitted it, said he's going to go to 140 here soon. But, man, what a nightmare. So some current fight news out there, not just that, but there is some other news out there. And, of course, the boxing Twitter segment, you know, where we read some great tweets, the tweets of the week, basically. We'll stumble upon some fanboy tweets that'll make you laugh or cringe. And, of course, expose the boxing media behaving like fanboys on boxing Twitter. But if this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. Don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope-A-Dope if you don't want to and download the show there directly or listen to the browser. You can find the platform in a whole lot of places on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher. Also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. Prices start as low as $69.99 a month. The best of live TV and on-demand. No annual contracts. No hidden fees. And if you upgrade to the Choice or Ultimate Package, that gives you 3 months free of HBO Max. You can also enjoy regional sports networks with no additional fees. And here's something to think about, boxing fans. If you go up to the Premier Package, that'll give you HBO Max and Showtime, who has the best schedule in boxing right now, if that's already included. Okay, so that's DirecTV Stream. Okay. So obviously, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, you know, Anthony needs to do this. Anthony Joshua needs to do that and this. And, you know, there is such a thing as not sticking to a game plan for most of the fight. So I see a lot of people that say, well, he can make a bunch of adjustments. And it's like, oh, he can make adjustments, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with trying to make adjustments in the fight. Now, I did talk about how there was some rounds, not many, and maybe not even full rounds, where he did step up the pace a little bit. I remember him going to the body and whatnot, landing some big shots or whatever. But overall, he was content to fight at range. And, of course, he always fights at range. But it generally is at a range not only that he's comfortable with, but he's generally inching forward. He's not this come-forward fighter that's just going to brawl you. There was a time not long ago where he'd throw these wild right hands, go for the knockout, and end up gassing out. He did, you know, his body did look lean, like we mentioned. What he weighed at 240, which is a little bit higher than he has in some other fights, but obviously lower than a lot of the 250 and 255 stuff. Some people are saying, no, you got to put that weight back on and just bully him. But, you know, Anthony Joshua's not a bully, per se. You know, like I said, he's not this Tasmanian devil that's going to just come forward and just go nuts. You know what I mean? That's just not him. But he does need to switch it up as far as trying to outbox or outskill a guy like Usyk in the middle of the ring. It's one thing to have range. It's another thing to sometimes get backed up by the guy. So, before we get into the rematch, though, you know, the first handful of rounds, it was tough to give Joshua rounds. I heard that, I remember Eddie Hearn, which obviously, you know, it's AJ's promoter, so he's obviously biased, but he said he had it a tie, 4-4 at the halfway mark, and then Usyk, you know, won all the last four. I know the scorecards were pretty close, but I'll say this, in the first four rounds, kind of tough for me to give many, you know, rounds to Joshua. I mean, he lands some right hands, and, you know, I think he added like a really nice late left hand from time to time in the opening rounds. But Usyk, you know, speaking of left hand, this is left hand early and later in the first round, along with probably three or four hard straight right hands in the second round. I liked how he was jabbing to the stomach. And another thing, we talked about how both of them were going to jab, right? That was something that they always liked to do. And, you know, clearly Usyk's jab was way more meaningful than AJ's. But part of that was by the second or third round, AJ's jab was getting countered already. That right cross over that jab and just the right cross in general, looking like a jab at the start from Usyk was really, really impressive to me. So, in the third round, he shook up AJ in the last part, I think it was. Several left hands along with this stiff jab, those right crosses, like I mentioned. Now, once you got into the fifth and the sixth round, then you could start to, I thought, give more rounds to AJ. The fifth round was a slower round, and it seemed like to me was probably the best round for him at that point. Give it to him. It seemed like he was jabbing better. He was landing right hands. In the sixth round, I definitely, you know, Usyk had some success early and mid, but the bigger shots down the stretch, including a couple of right hands. You know, we talked about in that round I gave to AJ, but we talked about the uppercut, and where was that uppercut? Now, we, you know, John and I talked about you don't want to be throwing it from, you know, left field, but it was kind of like, huh, so where is that thing? Like in the seventh round, Joshua got off to a good start. It looked like he was going to win the round. Then Usyk took it over and landed like five or six clear shots down the stretch. Now, the eighth round I gave to AJ, I thought he finally got to the body. He was landing shots to the body. And Usyk was on he had his jab and movement going a little bit, but it was maybe a little too much movement. Now, Usyk's eye was starting to bleed. You know, we started to see like cuts around there and just bleeding in general. But then in the ninth round, you saw AJ's eye swelling pretty damn good. Usyk, to me, in the 10th round, kind of got on his stick and move and won that round. But by the end of that 10th round, I believe, is when you started to see that eye swelling a whole lot. And I think it actually, speaking of uppercuts, I'm pretty sure Usyk in the 11th round landed a great uppercut and just better shots. I think it was early in that 11th round, if I remember. 12th round, Usyk, two or three times, I'd say, had AJ on the ropes, landing hard combinations. I didn't think that it was all that close to being stopped, though, I'll say that. I know there's some debate and controversy on the zone clock. I don't think it's the Sky Sports, but I think it's the zone round clock. And how they said, oh, they were saving AJ, so they had to stop the fight early. So they stopped it 5 seconds early or whatever. But even when AJ was on the rope for a second there and just sat there and smiled at him, and, of course, smiling doesn't mean you're not hurt, as we know, but I didn't think he was almost out of there, to be honest with you. I think he was buzzed. I think he was getting combinationed on in the ropes, but I actually didn't see him almost out. You know, maybe I'm wrong there. But Usyk put on just, like I said, those left hands, those sneaky right crosses, the jab to the body, the footwork, pivoting laterally, sometimes fully getting on his bike, other times just a reset. He really put on a great performance and showed his skill, that elite level skill. And, when you got him in the ring beyond height, it's not like Usyk. It's not like Usyk was way smaller, you know. So, like I said, you do have some people saying, "Oh, you know, Joshua needs to be over 250 because he was 250 in these other fights." But I think people forget how tired and how gassed out, not for 30 seconds, by the way, for like a round and a half that he was against Klitschko. So, I don't think he should go up to 255 and 260. Could he put a little more weight on and not be 235 or something? Yeah, sure. I think he weighed in, like I said, 240. But I think it could possibly just be the style matchup that's just going to give him issues. You know, I talked about last week how Joseph Parker, who's not known to be this very skillful outside fighter, was given – you know, Joshua some issues. When Joshua isn't able, and we said this a couple times last week, said it in the past as well, when he's not able to sit down on his punches and have somebody right in front of him or right in front of him on the ropes or whatever, he's just not as effective. You know, he can maybe land a jab, but he can't come behind it or land his uppercuts or whatever. You know, he can't put his punches together. And especially a guy who's fleet of foot and not just moving, you know, because Usyk wasn't moving the whole time. Maybe, you know, like I said, pivoting and laterally, sure, but he wasn't on his bike the whole time at all. He was in the pocket a lot of the time, which kind of makes me think, well, AJ is going to have to use, you know, he's going to have to use the jab to get inside, but maybe that jab does have to go to the stomach and the chest as well. Like I said, I saw those left-handed the bodies. I like the combinations getting inside and whatnot, but he's not this fierce come-forward fighter. He's just not. And maybe he can change it up. You know, we saw him be on the move against Ruiz. Now, he was moving against the guy who was severely out of shape and overweight, but that's not AJ's fault. I'm not ripping him for that or anything like that. That's obviously Ruiz, but it could just be style matchup here. It really could. You know, I'm not trying to say AJ has no chance. Like I said, there were some moments where he did get off on him and he did, you know, have success mixing it up to the head and body and threw his jab with authority. But sometimes it's hard, like I said, to throw it with authority over and over when you keep getting countered with it. So I don't know, but that eye, right? He said in the press conference he couldn't see out of the eye since the ninth round and on. And, you know, I went back and looked between rounds, and for sure the eye was not swollen really that much in the ninth round. Somewhere in the tenth is where it started getting swollen pretty bad. But, you know, and so in the corner, it was shutting. No doubt about it. And, you know, you never know. You don't need an eye fully shut to not be able to see that well, obviously. But he said it multiple times, and I know a doctor checked him out, but if you couldn't see in a fight, my guess is he'd be in the hospital making sure. Like, if you had four rounds where you couldn't see And then at the start of rounds from the end swell, the eye had calmed down a little bit. And then look after the fight, not just in the ring, but look at the press conference. Yeah, you could see there was a mouse and there was some issues there. But to say he couldn't see for the last four rounds, I thought it was a cop-out. I got to admit, it looked like he was kind of just saying, oh, that's basically why I lost down the stretch in a sense. You know, you could even see it. You know, the eye doctor's checking him out, and he's kept moving his eye, like, don't touch it, don't touch it. And then he'd close his eyes, and he kept, like, moving around, like, as if he was in pain, like, both of his eyes when the fight was over, when he was on the stool. Because remember, he sat on the stool the whole time, and I did think it was funny how Roy Jones was like, don't sit down. You're gonna give the judge is going to score against you. It's like, dude, everybody knows Usyk won the 12th round, you know, so I don't think they're not going to go back and be like, you know what, I'm changing that ninth round, you know, or whatever. So I thought that was kind of funny. But to me, it looked like he was using it as an excuse. I'll just be honest, you know, because why do you need to shut your other eye if that's not swollen for one? And like I said, he just kept moving away from the eye doctor would back up and go back and look. If you don't know what I'm saying, go back and look at the last couple of minutes before they announced the winner. Just go back and look. And even after, you can see it was on the screen, the big screen. And he's closing his eyes and he's getting water on him and he's like, no, no. And he doesn't want to get checked out and he's looking like he's in this major pain. But then all of a sudden after, his eye doesn't look swollen much. I mean, it looks swollen, but it's not closed or anywhere closed. And as you know, if you got a really bad eye that's closing, if it's closed and you can't see, it's not going to, you know, right after the fight and even in the press conference, not going to be better. You know, anything that swells that much is not going to look that much better after you're done with the fight or even when you start the round. So, and I actually went back and looked. I noticed it when I was watching the fight live, but when I heard him in the press conference, I went back and checked, and I was like, I don't know, dude. It sounds like a cop-out. To say you couldn't see for the last four rounds, you'd go to the hospital, dude, not just have some random doctor there. You'd go to a specialist probably. Hold on, let me make sure. I couldn't see for four rounds. That's a major thing, especially when you're not at the press conference with a closed eye, is my point. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm not trying to throw Anthony Joshua under the bus, but I do think it's an excuse. If he keeps sticking to this, I couldn't see for the last four rounds. I didn't see that, no pun intended. Anyway, you know, he's just going to have to be more of a bully. He's going to have to let his punches go. And, hey, he got hit and clipped with a lot of clean punches. If Usyk... You know, Usyk's not known to have a bunch of power at cruiserweight. So you knew he wasn't, you know, wasn't going to have a bunch of power at heavyweight, but he had plenty of pop. And not just, you got to respect me, pop. You know what I mean? He definitely shook up AJ, whether he was full on hurt or buzzed or whatever. But since he could take those shots, especially if he said he can't see, then it's time to counter back. It's time to win those exchanges. And that was another thing, and I'm talking about AJ doing that, because that was another thing that impressed me with Usyk. We knew the skill was there, and we figured if it was going to be a skill fest, a skills competition in the middle of the ring mostly, that he was probably going to win that fight. But I like how he'd fire back, even though sometimes he would, you know, in the round get hit with a really clean shot, but he'd make sure to come back with one or two. And it just didn't seem like Joshua was either game plan ready, couldn't adjust, or whatever. And a lot of that had to do with Usyk, and we may see the same thing in the rematch. I do think it'll be a tighter fight. I had it like 8-4, 9-3, this whole 7-5, 6-6 stuff. I've heard multiple people say I had it anywhere from 8-4 to 6-6. Some people say, you know, I've heard a couple people that I know anyway on Boxing Twitter to an extent, that, you know, have been watching fights for a long time. Knowing people online is kind of a funny term, right? Because how well do we know people sometimes? But to even shade it anywhere near that would give a, it could have went either way. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I personally, I didn't see 7-5, but I'm willing to give you that. But I'd say it's more of the 9-3 to 7-5 range than it is 8-4 to a draw. I don't know how you saw a draw in that fight. I mean, he didn't even land the best punches in the fight. So you got a guy outlanding someone and landing the best punches overall. So I couldn't see that. Anyway, you know, of course we'll talk about Manny Pacquiao. You know, as far as the stadium, obviously the UK fans always deliver when it comes to this, especially Anthony Joshua fans and UK boxing in general. So kudos to you guys. It was great seeing that energy. It, you know, the walkouts are intense. They're fun. They take too long. But, hey, I'm willing to take in the spectacle. You know what I mean? But because of, you know, Lawrence Okoli and, well, Callum Smith, too, because of some of these mismatches, I didn't think Callum Smith would score a knockout the way he did. Whereas Okoli, you knew he'd get, what was it, a third round or something like that. And luckily, Castillo does sound like he's okay because his legs were shaking. That was a crazy knockout. Very scary from Callum Smith, by the way. But my point is, and then Campbell Hatton, by the way, lost that fight. What was it, a six-rounder? Martinez won that fight. That was ridiculous, and I heard him after saying, and, you know, kudos to Eddie Hearn saying, hey, I thought he lost the fight. You know, I respect that. But, he, you know, Campbell was like, I couldn't even barely give him a round or two. You know, after, I'm like, really, dude? I mean, there were six of them. I'm sure you could find some of them in there. But, yeah, Campbell Hatton, back to the drawing board. And right now that drawing board is, like, used with crayons, right? Not paint, if you know what I mean. He's got a lot to work on. But that 60-minute break, it didn't affect me much because I saw people – freaking out on Twitter, but college football was on, and then I had to go to work. I was thinking, oh, dude, I'm going to see this whole main event because, you know, the fights ended early, and then there was a long-ass break, and I know DAZN likes to set their times as well across the country, and I know they put that out, so I get that part of it, but that kind of sucked. But other than that, the fans, you know, always intense. The place is pretty quiet, though, obviously, down the stretch of that. But I'm going to go ahead and bring in a great boxing mind that joins us mostly weekly, John, to give his take on how this thing turned out. What's going on, John? How the hell are you doing on this fine Wednesday night?
Hey, Chris, great to be here as always, and I was looking forward to your breakdown of the fight, which I was just listening to before you brought me in here. I was thinking of you as I was watching the fight live. Was able to see it live, fortunately, and I was thinking about how you take good notes as you're scoring the fight and with the rounds, and I've definitely been looking forward to talking about this fight. I think maybe one of the easiest thing to do, though, since you just left off with the scoring, is it definitely seems like I'm in the minority, but might as well say how I was seeing it because it kind of fits in with what you just said. I did think that there were some swing rounds that could have gone either way. I did give the fight to Usyk, and most of the fight I saw the same way you did too, but there are just a couple of differences and the scoring is kind of a good place to pick it up. You know, if I recall, I got to start taking the notes like you do, but you know, we're all doing a bunch of things and trying to watch the fight. If I recall, I think I did give Usyk the first two rounds as well. But I didn't think there was a real lot going on, and then I thought it kind of continued. I mean, it was a very interesting fight. It was entertaining, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, you know, Usyk did sting Joshua a couple times as it went along with that overhand left. That's his power shot. But, you know, in the early part, you know, I thought, you know, somewhat of the chess match. And I thought there was, you know, rounds. I think I gave Usyk the first two, but then I thought there was rounds that could have gone either way. And I think the easiest way for me to pick it up is for people that were watching the DAZN broadcast. And apparently it's my understanding, and Chris, maybe you could confirm, but it seemed like our friends in the UK on the pay-per-view, they were getting different commentators than we were getting on DAZN. So Why I'm just prefacing my remarks on that is, you know, Roy Jones was on DAZN with, I believe, Darren Barker. And, you know, people were knocking him, but hey, you got to, I got to say what I'm perceiving and what I'm seeing. As the fight went on, I thought Usyk was what I thought he was, and, you know, in a good way. And, you know, he was, as you and I discussed, I felt good about a lot of what we discussed. And I pointed out, you know, I thought, you know, Joshua, he likes to go jab right uppercut, even though that's unorthodox for that to be your main power punch when you got a jab. And like you said correctly, you know, I thought, how's he going to land that right uppercut on Usyk, a southpaw who's quick and good defensively, and how's he going to land that jab? And he was having trouble with both. You could see in the game plan, I thought, that they wanted him to throw a straight right, a right cross, which he has trouble doing. It's strange for a big, tall guy with a long reach who's a power puncher, but I've seen that throughout his career. He's not a Vlad Klitschko who's just, you know, 1-2 with that big right hand coming behind it, you know, the cross or the straight right. He goes to that right uppercut, and he was trying to, you know, go with some straight rights, but he couldn't do it with the authority because he just not as good with that punch. And it's harder, you know, especially, you know, how many southpaws has Joshua fought in the pros? You know, there aren't many southpaw heavyweights. We've been knowing that throughout all time and made famous, of course, in the first Rocky, where there really was just about nobody fighting southpaw at heavyweight, except in the movies. You know, you see it more than you used to. And, you know, Michael Moore came up from light heavy, picked up the lineal title. And even though he had a different style than Usyk, you know, he would get hit, relied more on his power even as he went up. But still, you know, he got to the lineal title, you know, close fight, but beat Evander Holyfield, and he was a southpaw. You know, people didn't see that. So I could see Joshua having those troubles, could see what the game plan was, and he was having trouble really, you know, landing that straight right he was going to try to go with authority. And one thing he couldn't do that you really would want to be doing in a fight like that is, you know, he tried the left hook a little because the southpaw wasn't that effective. I didn't see him lead with the straight right at all. Now, normally with a southpaw, even one as quick as Usyk, you know, you're going to be trying to do that. And I noticed that. I mean, even though he's fighting a southpaw, and like you said, Usyk's then doing better with the jab because he's always fighting right-handers. You know, even though he's a southpaw. So he's not having problems getting in what he wants to get in, but Joshua is. But with all that said, I thought to a degree what I'm sure their game plan was and why I thought Joshua could still win the fight, I thought started to take place and why I was talking about the DAZN commentary, because a lot of people disagreed, but I agreed. I was seeing it the same way. You know, Jones and Barker said, Joshua's coming on now. He's about to take control of the fight. Now, I can tell what we've seen in Twitter in days afterward, whatever people's agenda is, or they really believed it, they didn't agree with that. They didn't want to hear it. I was seeing it the same way. So that's kind of an easy way for me to get to it. So, and I saw it around the same rounds you were. You know, I thought, you know, Joshua had a lot of trouble early here. He's having trouble with what I thought he would, but just as the fight's going on, you know, with him having power. And you know, he wasn't slow in there. I got to give Joshua that. You know, like you said, waiting at 240.
True.
You know, Usyk's quick, but he this was not a speed mismatch in this fight, you know, for how big Joshua is. I mean, he was
true,
holding his own. And, you know, I thought – so that was good for him. And I thought, you know, what I saw – and again, you and I talked about this last week. This is not after-the-fact stuff. And I saw this, and I'm going to get it. I think this is where, to me, Joshua ended up losing the fight, blow it, or Usyk won it because he did some good things at that point. But I kind of want to get to what I saw. I think Jones and Barker were seeing it the same way. When Joshua, if you want to look at it the way I was and those guys were, was starting to take charge for a little bit there. As you mentioned, I saw, you know, he banged Usyk to the body. The only time he got his right uppercut in, which is his best power punch, was to the body. And Usyk did the same stuff he did against Gassiev. And I said that I said that last week, so you can go listen to it. I've said it before. I said it 3 years ago. He's stopping. He's looking to the referee. Now, Joshua is hurting him bad to the body. Now, to Usyk's credit, because a lot of fighters won't do it, at least he does seem to be a pretty honest guy. He said then, it was yesterday or the day before, I got hurt bad to the body by him. You know, I mean, this is the man himself
yeah.
saying it, okay? So,
right.
you know, Joshua, you know, he's doing that stuff. Then after that, what I saw, Joshua was starting to get the jab in a little more. And, Chris, you'll remember this because you take notes and you always have a good breakdown of the fight, even in detail. Usyk started pawing at his nose. He started pawing at his nose. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, we've seen – you know, I saw some of this in the Gassiev fight. Joshua's got to step it up. Now, here's the way I saw it is just what you pointed out in your breakdown. I think, you know, you were really emphasizing it, and I think I saw it just the way you did was – and, again, Barker and Roy Jones were saying it. So, you know, it's just easier for me then to refer to that if you've heard the DAZN commentary. If you're in the UK and you haven't, then I'm giving you a little rundown. You know, they started saying – Usyk's, you know, he's got something with the eye. He's busted up. And then just I was thinking this is starting to go Joshua's way, just over a little bit of the attrition because he's got more power. And he was buckled worse than Usyk. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm going to get into that a
sure.
little bit because that's very important too. But just the way I saw kind of the fight generally going. And I agree, Joshua was afraid of getting countered because Usyk was hurting him with the overhand left, which – you know, that was something going into the fight I was wondering about, but I'm going to get into that more because, yeah, he was afraid of getting countered because he was getting hurt. But, you know, you saw Usyk busting up. And, again, you saw the pictures after the fight. You know, you had these people saying master
yeah.
class. You know, it was dominant.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
he was unscathed. Nothing happened, you know.
You're right,
I've
yeah.
never seen anything like it. And that, to me, was just nonsense or wishful thinking. So, you know,
for
but
sure.
here's where I'm going to give Usyk a lot of credit. So I'm kind of leading up to the way I saw how the decisive moments played out. So just when it looks like Joshua's taken over, Usyk's done the stuff to the body, bad body language, really bad body language when he got hit to the body, like he did against Gassiev, looking to the ref, you know, claiming it's low when it wasn't. We all saw that. He did it against Gassiev. But Joshua didn't, you know, this is what people are criticizing with the guy, and I think rightfully so. He doesn't
yeah.
step it into another gear at any of those points. Then Usyk starts to
bust it up
late in the fight. He doesn't step it into another gear again. And then just almost at that exact moment, I saw what you saw. Joshua's also marked up at the eye. Now, this is where you get, you know, Usyk, I thought his head movement was great in this fight. I thought the old Dennis Green,
yeah.
if you know American football, you know, I thought Usyk is who I thought he was, but where I want
right.
to really compliment him is his head movement was really good. He's not a runner, like you
in
said.
In the
I mean,
pocket,
and I
too.
Said that going in.
In the pocket.
Yeah, he
yep.
stayed.
In the pocket.
He moves his,
that was
right.
impressive.
He moves his feet. Yeah, and his head movement right there in front was very impressive. But here's the other thing that was very impressive is, to me, it was like two guys had some moments where they showed some of their past vulnerabilities. In other words, Usyk with that bad language getting hit to the body, then he's getting marked up, you know, and he was stopping at those points. And again, to me, he even confirmed this after the fight with his recent comments. I mean, you know, like when he, you know, a couple times when he was getting nailed, now he was not buckled as bad as Joshua, don't get me wrong, never was during the course of the fight, but there was just a couple times when he got nailed, a few times really, you know, most, you know, prominently to the body, but also even with some of the jabs and a couple of the right hands where he was just kind of like stopped, you know, and he kind of backed off. I mean, I don't know if you remember seeing that, but he did that on more than one occasion. But again, it was Joshua never taking it to another gear. Now, what I'm getting to is we got into the late rounds. It was like there, both guys were having some adversity and one guy picked it up and the other guy didn't. And the guy that picked it up was Usyk. You know, he's got a great gas tank. We've said that going in. He throws a lot of punches. Again, he is who we thought he was there. We talked about the Hunter fight, and I said, and you thought the same, that win has aged really well. And in that fight, I thought that the fight could have been stopped on numerous occasions. I said that last week. Ref let Hunter go on, but I actually think they could have stopped it. And that was late in the fight. Usyk was battering him. So Usyk picks it up then over the last two rounds. Joshua never tries to press Usyk, never tries to advantage. Like you said, you know, he's got the eye. Usyk's getting busted up. You saw the pictures afterward. But he picks it up. You know, he picks it up with his usual gas tank, his usual volume. And then I do disagree with you. I mean, it doesn't look that much on replay, but I'm still going to go with my live impression because sometimes I almost like that better, just my feeling of it. I thought Joshua was gone. I mean, I thought he just hasn't shown me the fortitude, really. Yeah, I know he got up against Klitschko, but this is a marked difference because Klitschko was a 41-year-old guy who didn't have the gas tank to finish at that point. Just
right.
Couldn't. He wasn't a stamina guy. Let's face it, Vlad Klitschko's stamina was poor throughout his career. He had to have a very careful, measured pace, quit against Ross Purity late, you know, got in a war with Waymon Brewster, was gassing out and got knocked out. You know, that's why he did all the clutching and grabbing. But just saying, like, he had problems like that. Joshua, a much younger guy. There was no finishing
right.
pressure, really, on Joshua after Klitschko hurt him in that fight. But now Usyk, a guy who throws a ton of punches, and then he was going for it. He was going for it, and Joshua wasn't. I gave Usyk, none of the judges did. I think it could be warranted, especially when you compare it with all the other rounds of the fight. Personally, I thought Usyk earned a 10-8. I thought that
12.
Round was so different. Yeah, in the 12th. That was so different from the rest of the fight. I thought Joshua was ready to go. I felt like it was a Dillian White Parker type situation. I'm not calling conspiracy theory, just the way it worked out that, you know, had that fight gone on another 30 seconds, Usyk's got a great gas tank. He throws a lot of punches.
Sure.
You know, Joshua does not respond. You know, we're starting to see enough of this now. You know, Joshua just does not respond well to adversity. I think the Klitschko fight's the exception because that's a 41-year-old guy, you know, who hadn't
And like you said, he let him off the hook because he was gassed for like a round and a half. If Klitschko would have picked it up any, he would have knocked him out, I think, for sure.
Right, and I don't even think Klitschko listened to his own corner there. If you watch Vlad Klitschko later in his career, especially, I mean, he just wasn't even, you know, that's the thing. As much as Manny Stewart did with him, and then, you know, Banks took over afterward, but Klitschko didn't, you know, you really look at the corner, even though we all like talking about that, including even myself, but Klitschko doesn't, listen, but it does apply to that Joshua fight because, yeah, you know, finished it. He just doesn't, there was a lot of times he just doesn't listen. You would hear good advice telling him to go to the body. He wouldn't listen. That was one of those types of instances, you know. He was going to pull back and do it his way, and he ended up getting knocked out. But then Joshua, you know, he did have more problems with Parker than she, but I think Parker can box with that jab. He's boring when he does it, but you're right. You make a point. I mean, wasn't Joshua looking that great, but, you know, Joshua just didn't finish. The other guy, Usyk, did, to his credit. I think what I'm looking at, if they're, you know, because of the way the fight finished, when it first finished, I thought I had Joshua no chance in the rematch, but having a little chance to think about it and thinking how close he was, I actually think in his case, it does have to be a new corner. I'm not putting it all on McCracken, but Joshua got bad advice. I mean, you heard that too. I mean, this is just on tape. Some people are saying bad night because what else can you say? I mean, key moments of the fight that we're talking about when Usyk was under adversity and then Joshua had it with the eye and the fight's up for grabs. I mean, to me, and, you know, of course, even the way I scored, I mean, it's up for grabs, you know, but even Joshua's a powerful guy. He should be capable of scoring a knockout. His corner's telling him to box. His corner's telling him to box down the stretch. One guy's coming on going for it, Usyk, who's known as a master boxer, but he's letting it all hang out, and Joshua's corner's telling him to box. I mean, it was just terrible. You know what fight were they watching? What field did they have? All I can say in McCracken's defense, and this really, there could be something to this. I mean, the one thing that I had started to lose faith in Joshua's chin. But I'll say this, I didn't know which way it would go. You know, I thought Usyk, not like you said, not even being a huge puncher with cruiserweights, you know, a solid puncher but not huge, you know, that maybe Joshua's chin would hold up against him. But Usyk buckled him relatively early in the fight, and he did it on a few occasions. And, you know, Joshua's chin was not holding up. And to me, he was out in the 12th, so just about. So I think what the hindsight, you got to look at, well, what was something maybe you didn't see coming. Saw coming Joshua having some of the trouble landing that he did. Thought maybe late in the fight he would go for it more with that right uppercut he likes, even though it's risky because it's his favorite power shot and his best one, even though it's dangerous, and pick it up, you know, try to wear Usyk out a little bit, you know, really pick up his pace a bit. But he never did that. He never went for it, and Usyk did. But I didn't. I thought I was leaning towards the side of Joshua's chin was going to hold up against Usyk a little better than that. That's something I have to now take into account. I think I've seen enough. First of all, let me be fair. It's heavyweight. Everybody gets hurt. You know, you can go through the top 10. I mean, Tyson Fury got dropped by Steve Cunningham, and then he survived Deontay Wilder twice. So, you know, and Cunningham was not a puncher at cruiserweight. My point there is
not at all.
You know, maybe. Right. I mean, maybe Fury's chin can still be reached. I'm not going to eliminate that with him either, even though he's been in twice with Wilder. He got dropped twice in the first fight. But point is, it's heavyweight. I mean, you know, Dillian White, I don't think he takes the greatest shot, but, I mean, he's already been stopped a couple of times, dropped a lot. You know, Wilder got stopped by Fury. You know, it's heavyweight boxing. You know, you're going to get hurt. I mean, the greats have been down. You know, Larry Holmes, you know, Muhammad Ali. So, you know, you're going to, you know, Rocky Marciano. I mean, you're going to get hurt and you're going to get dropped. So I want to be fair to Joshua there. But with that understood, I still think we've seen enough. You do have to evaluate fighters in perspective for their division and other fighters' attributes. And I'm ready to say Joshua doesn't take a shot well. I mean, I thought that after the fight. I'm gonna operate under that assumption going on. So, you know, to me, maybe McCracken was looking at that too. But here's the part I want to throw in that, you know, if McCracken was looking at it that way, really what Joshua needed to add here that he didn't, you know, he was fighting it really more like he did the Ruiz fight to a degree, a little more right hands. But, you know, like you said, trying to stay at range, you know, even though he's in with a southpaw where it's hard to land the jab, you know, just forcing the jab. But he didn't do any clinching and leaning on Usyk, you know, trying to wear him out with his weight as the fight went on. Now, that's something when Vlad Klitschko got with Emanuel Stewart, that's what they used to protect. Now remember, Manny Stewart, I think, is one of the greatest trainers of all time, arguably might be the greatest trainer of all time. I learned a ton just reading things he said, hearing things he said. But his first fight with Klitschko got knocked out by Brewster. So let's remember. But that's where then the adjustment was made. Everybody, including myself, and it really was everybody at that point. You know, Klitschko got knocked down by DeVaro Williamson after that, even though he won. Everybody thought he was done. But Manny Stewart did develop this. You know, then he developed having him with the 1-2, but doing all the clinching and grabbing whenever anybody got close. They had to get through the Sam Peter fight where he got dropped multiple times, but Klitschko gritted it out. But they started developing that strategy, you know, where he was protecting the chin. I mean, he was never doing any kind of exchange in engaging. He, you know, whenever the guy got close, he was grabbing and leaning.
Yep.
And some people, and rightfully so, said, hey, you know, ref should be penalizing him for that. You know, points should be taken away.
Right.
But that didn't happen. It actually, but I'm going to say this because it made a difference. Even though Klitschko got old, you did see in the Bryant Jennings fight, that particular referee, I'm forgetting who it was, but he didn't let Klitschko hold. It's like a little kid that had his toy taken away. And, you know, and Bryant Jennings is not a threatening puncher, but he went the distance.
Right.
And, you know, then in Tyson Fury, it was a bit the same. I mean, it was a terrible fight, probably the worst heavyweight fight I've ever seen, worst lineal heavyweight title fight of all time. You know, just a terrible fight. But you know, Klitschko, again, not really able to do what he'd been doing. And in that Joshua finale, he was not able to do all the grabbing. So, you know, what I'm saying is in that bulk, I mean, Klitschko, a great fighter, a great reign against not great opposition, but it was that game plan that did it. You know, the holding and the grabbing, then when the opponent was getting tired, getting frustrated, then the right-hand hammer started coming down, you know, and then he would get knockouts. I mean, Klitschko was a very big puncher, but, you know, Joshua was a big puncher. And, you know, they both have jabs, but Joshua doesn't have that straight right hand. You know, he doesn't throw that straight right hand across, a straight right hand well a lot. And it's a strange thing. With him, it's all the right uppercut, and that's where he's got a bad style match with Usyk. But what I'm saying, if McCracken – I don't know if McCracken can make the strategic adjustments for Joshua that he needs in a rematch. He did it with the Ruiz fight, but let's face it. I mean, even people who are Joshua fans – And I gave him about every round in that fight, but Ruiz was 283. And
yeah,
it just wasn't that
good. He couldn't even barely move.
Performance.
He looked
right.
like
and
a
again,
whale out there
go
trying to look like a
yeah,
beach
and we've
whale.
Got to go on what, yeah, exactly. And we've got to go on what we see. You got to evaluate with what you see. And I'm looking at this. I mean, you know, Chris Arreola dropped and hurt Andy Ruiz on multiple, you know, he dropped him and then hurt him on other badly.
Yeah.
On other occasions, I mean, you know, I tweeted out today because I was just thinking about it as we're getting ready to break this down. I mean, Arreola hurt Andy Ruiz more in one fight than Anthony Joshua did over two fights. I mean, he dropped him in the first, and then that was the end of it, and he did nothing with him in the second. He won all the rounds. I'll give him that, but 283-pound guy plodding around. I mean, the scale doesn't lie. Ruiz was 283. You know, he was not
right.
He was not prepared. So I'm you know, the Andy Ruiz series for Joshua is not really aging well. You know, he did get hurt by the older Klitschko. Again, I'm saying it's heavyweight, but you know now he's lost to Usyk, and Usyk's hurt him on a few occasions. That's the part that, and Joshua didn't respond well late. That's kind of what, you know, Usyk's very skilled, but that's kind of what comes out bad about this for Joshua. So. Punch resistance not looking too good. You know, I think as good as Usyk does a lot of things and as much of a signature performance as it was, we can't forget Joshua lost to Ruiz. I mean, you can't forget that either. Got knocked out by him. But just saying that, you know, it's not going to be easy to do because Usyk's a southpaw who's fast and has a lot of stamina. But you do see the vulnerabilities about the body shots.
Sure.
You know, he shows me, I got to say it, you know, people get mad, but you got to say on what you see and because it can come out later on. He looks like if he really gets pressed, he might have some problems. And that's what I think people are kind of trying to put their finger on with the Joshua bullying. But I agree with some of the Usyk backers on that. I mean, Usyk's not going to be that easy to just, you know, hunt down and bully. It's not going to be – I think that, too. That's not going to be that simple.
Yeah, because he didn't even show his bicycle game. You know, he didn't even get on his 10-speed yet. So we didn't even know what that looks like trying to cut him down, you know. So and is Joshua overnight just going to be like in one camp just be this, you know, force of destruction coming forward? I don't think so.
No, I think you made an excellent point, though. We don't – even though Usyk's a very good boxer, because it actually might not be that good, we don't know what Usyk's bicycle game looks like or somebody who's really pressing him with power. But I'm going to be fair to Usyk and some, you know, people who, you know, think highly of him. I mean, I think highly of him, but just, you know, I think some of these people think he's the second coming of, you know, Muhammad Ali, and I'm not ready to say that yet. I mean, Joshua's wasn't even the lineal champ. He's never even held the lineal belt. You know, he's never been champ of the ring or transnational. I mean, and I think it matters. I mean, I think you're going to possibly even see that with Fury and Wilder, whoever wins, you know, on October 9th. I mean, it matters that you haven't faced that guy, and that doesn't mean Usyk might not beat either of those two guys or couldn't. But it matters to see it. And we don't know, you know, when he's pressed. And now Fury, you know, has shown that he can add this element of pressing when he wants to, which is, you know, been a bit of a newer wrinkle for him. But that matters. Now,
and
Wilder,
that was full-on bully move, too. I mean, he was bullying and bruising and just roughhousing, too, you know. I don't see Joshua roughhousing like that.
No, I don't either. I don't think in one fight. I think what I'm looking at, and I still think I'm not putting it all on McCracken, but and I don't like to go too quick with the blame, and I'm not saying it's all him, but this is one for the reasons you and I are talking. I thought he was close. You know, I'm thinking he might have more of a chance than I first thought when the fight ended, because the way I saw it, he was in it until he kind of wilted down the stretch, and maybe a new trainer with a different game plan. I'm not thinking this bullying thing like everybody says. I don't think that's an automatic and he can do it in one fight. But I think what I've got in mind is more, you know, some of what he was doing, let's say through eight rounds or so, but with more of this grabbing Usyk every time he gets close, leaning on him. And then when he gets right. the advantages, in other words, when he lands that right uppercut to the body, you know, he's got to throw more body shots. You know, of course, he's going to be worried about getting countered, but he's going to have to do it. That, you know, when Usyk starts giving the bad body language, or when he starts landing the jab or some right hands and Usyk's giving the bad body language, he's got to press. You know, and I think that would probably be later in the fight, even though, but even though Usyk's got to, you know, that's what he's got to want it. That I think the old-fashioned stuff gets overrated, but in this fight you could see some of that. I mean, you know, kind of like a similar fight to what he had for eight rounds, but a better fight where, you know, he's grabbing him more when he gets close, leaning on him, tiring him out, more attrition, trying to get Usyk worn out, not bullying, you know, maybe like where he's just walking forward. He doesn't have the chin for that. I mean, I agree with the detractors that are saying, how's he going to do that? Because he's not showing he can take a shot. I mean, he's not old George Foreman, or even what we've seen so far early in the career, Joe Joyce. You know, he can't walk forward, and at heavyweight nobody can for too long. But you know, you got to be fair to Joshua. But he looks, his chin looks even more fragile than that. You know, he can't walk forward taking shots. That's I don't think that's in him. So he's going to have to do the Bob Klitschko.
I mean, he's got to throw two punch combos at some point. But you're right, the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth, if he can start the fight like that, he definitely has a shot, you know.
Right. It doesn't have to be this all-out war bully like people are talking, but he's got to do more from the beginning, where even though Usyk's been the high gas tank guy, that maybe in the second fight, if he got to an eighth, ninth round, he could have more attrition on Usyk, more wear on him. Then we get a look at Usyk, what he looks like when he's pushed back or has to get on a bicycle, which we haven't seen, or like you said, about putting more punches together. You know, when a body shot hurts Usyk, or he gets caught with a stiff jab and he backs off and he hesitates, or Joshua does have one of the times he gets a straight right hand in, that Joshua's following up. You know, no more this, I'm a boxer, you know, I'm just going to try to outpoint you over 12, like it's an amateur fight or something like that. I mean, you know, and that's where I think the McCracken, you know, you see some of that. That's where you do sometimes get a bit of cultural differences, I think, with some of the trainers and things. I mean, you know, he's got to fight Usyk more where it's attrition. You know, he's trying to put hurt on him over the course of the fight and ultimately resulting in getting him out of there. You know, not an amateur style, you know, we're going to come out ahead on points at the end without dropping them or really hurting them badly and trying to finish them. That's not going to work. That's Usyk's game. So that's kind of the way I saw the whole thing. I initially thought Joshua had no chance in a rematch, but a couple of days to think about it, thinking of where I saw the fight, at least the way I saw it around eight, nine rounds, I think in this one it is going to take a trainer change, and I would even go as far as, hey, look, Fury did it. We're not speaking out of line here. Otto Wallen did it. You know, he may just have to come to the U.S. and, you know, no matter what Eddie Hearn's saying or whatever, whoever else might be, and, you know, get a trainer over here. You know, in theory, like a McGirt or. You know, I hadn't thought about it till today, frankly, but I started even thinking about Gamache. I mean, look, you know, they brought him in.
Sure.
Keo Lopez. You
That's
saw
a
how
good
he
name,
handled
yeah.
Lomachenko. And you know, Wallen came to New York to train with him, and you know, I think Wallen's going to upset White, you know, barring, like I said, a crazy weigh-in or something like that. I mean, I'm leaning heavily towards Wallen in that fight. So, you know, just throwing out some ideas. I mean, you know, so I think, but if I think if Joshua just goes with McCracken and he's just training in the UK, is it impossible for him turning around? Maybe. I don't in that scenario, I don't see him turning it around. So I think I will say that. I don't think that's going to do it.
Now, sometimes, you know, some of these older fighters will say stuff about the younger generation, and it comes, and some of it's just, you know, right up the, like, the perfect thing to say, and it needs to be said and all that. Other times it's like, it comes from more of a jealousy look or whatever. I saw some of that, but I've seen multiple media guys who aren't just random YouTubers, you know, whatever, but talk about Usyk, and now we got the Evander Holyfield Usyk cruiserweight. I want to know your thoughts on Usyk at cruiserweight, or just in general, because he did go up to heavyweight and win, and then Evander Holyfield in his career, but especially at cruiserweight, because a lot of people are already saying Usyk, but you know, Usyk's got it all day, and it is kind of funny to be like, well, why'd you wait to say it, you know, now that he's at heavyweight? Why don't you just say that when he won the lineal? Well, what are your thoughts on Holyfield and Usyk and how they match up as far as cruiserweight runs, quality of opponent, all that stuff, because they obviously do have a nice resume, both of them.
Well, here's where I think it's actually, I'm glad you asked me that now, Chris, because it's going to make it easier for me to talk about. I mean, I always like to look, I think I've said it before, I'll say it again so I'm clear. I mean, the heavyweights have gotten so big, I do think there's a place for a cruiserweight division. So I start out with that. But with that understood, I still always like to evaluate things with the original eight weight classes. And I even do it with heavyweight and cruiserweight because anybody who's really, really that good at cruiserweight, the money's at heavyweight.
Sure.
They're going to fight at heavyweight, and they're going to prove themselves. And we've seen, this is why I always get back into that, we've seen Michael Moore win the lineal heavyweight title from light heavyweight. We've seen Michael Spinks do it from light heavyweight at heavyweight. We've seen James Toney come up from middleweight and beat top 10 heavyweights. We saw Roy Jones come up from middleweight and beat a top 10 heavyweight. So why I say all that is, and people, they always have trouble gripping that, but now they won't be as defensive about it because now Usyk's got a big heavyweight win. You know, to me, lineal champ, transnational champ, ring champ, Fury, Joshua was the number one contender as of Saturday night. Usyk beat him. I'm not going to change what I said before the fight. I felt, and I tweeted this too, I felt for Usyk, I've always felt this, you know, for him and the people who loved him hated hearing this because they didn't know what was going to happen, even though they said they did, but they don't know. Nobody knows for sure. That, it, you know, to really validate his claim for greatness, he's got to do something at heavyweight. And for me, it was even enough if he performed very well Saturday night,
right,
or he won, which he won. I had him win in the fight too. That then we could start talking about this. So yes, we, you know, to me, even though people wanted to talk about it before then, I mean, I just didn't want to get in the endless debate and having to explain where I'm coming from with some of these people, but it shouldn't have even been talked about. Now you can't, I think this is enough. Now you can talk about it, but I'm going to still use sort of my same criteria is now when I'm looking at, they say, well, but at cruiserweight, but I'm saying, yeah, again, guys as good as Usyk and Holyfield, they're going to make their mark at heavyweight, or they weren't as good as you thought they were. So now Usyk has started to do it. You know, he's beat, you know, if you just, again, you compare all eras, he just beat the number one contender. Okay. So, hey, that matters. So he's beaten the number one contender, but then that's where I'm going to get back to my type of analysis. Some people don't want to hear it. Throw out the alphabets. You know, that's where the alphabets just cloud things. Usyk hasn't beaten the champ yet. Holyfield knocked out Buster Douglas. Now, was Buster Douglas unprepared for that fight? You got to say, it was like an Andy Ruiz, Joshua 2 type situation.
Yep.
He wasn't prepared. But I think Holyfield was prepared, and I think, you know, he won it with a one-punch knockout. He's a guy that did get in a lot of wars. I see I'm taking my mind back
and
to that.
And was Mike Tyson
time.
Prepared for his fight with Buster, too, to get that W? You know what I mean? So it kind of plays in both,
right?
Even if Buster wasn't.
Yeah,
you know.
You always wonder. But Holyfield, one-punch knockout. Why I say that is I've always kind of felt that even though Douglas wasn't prepared, Holyfield was very prepared, one-punch knockout. And Douglas knew how to box. So, you know, and Holyfield, one-punch knockout, got him out of there. Didn't play around. My guess is, since Holyfield got a lot of wear and tear from the wars, and that, you know, that started even with Cowie at Cruiserweight. He had the Dokes War before he even, knocked Douglas. I think that was probably, in my mind, that's always probably prime Holyfield, okay? So when I evaluate Evander Holyfield, I take him around the time of the Douglas fight, even though Douglas was overweight for that fight, because I think that's probably about Evander Holyfield at his best. Usyk, you know, is probably just about, even though people talk about the Chisora, the Witherspoon, you know, Usyk's just human too. He doesn't have motivation for all these guys. You know, he still clearly won both of those. You know, stopped Witherspoon, clearly beat Chisora. He's probably pretty close to his best right now. Or I would even be willing to agree that maybe he waited a little too long to move, you know, to the big guns at heavyweight. In other words, you know, maybe he didn't need all this WBSS stuff because the money's at heavyweight. You know, I mean, I'm not saying he didn't make some money, but the money is ultimately a heavyweight. I know when Top Rank had him in the U.S., they were looking at, you know, getting a move to heavyweight before long. And then they gave up on him from like a marketing standpoint. So, I think you can talk about it now. I think for me, again, for the way I analyze things, I mean, I think, you know, if Usyk picks up the lineal heavyweight title, so he's got to get through a Joshua rematch because we know that's contracted and it's going to, to happen because of contract, not because of any even alphabet stuff, just because of Hearn's contract. So we'd be talking a Joshua rematch win. And then, you know, if he beats that, then Fury Wilder winner, as long as that individual holds onto it, I have a feeling Hearn's going to try to force a Dillian White fight in there through WBC stuff, or try to, if White gets by Volland. I don't think he will, but you know, I'm not the amazing Kreskin. I can't say that for sure. So unfortunately, be a little down the line. But like, let's say if at the end of it, probably be at this time next year. You know, maybe if at this time next year he gets a lineal heavyweight title shot, he's still undefeated and he wins, I think then you talk, you know, then you say, well, who's really better, him or Holyfield? But I think Holyfield being the lineal heavyweight champ and, and then of course having gone on, having the big wins, you know, over Tyson later on when we thought he was done, even if that wasn't the best Tyson, you know, the guy was a 21-1 underdog. He's obviously a great fighter. I think then you can maybe start talking a little. I mean, it's going to be hard for Usyk, even though Holyfield, you know, started picking up losses and took a lot of punishment. You know, he still ended up being around at heavyweight in big fights for a long period of time. Is Usyk going to be able? These are interesting questions, though. Is Usyk going to be able to do that? I know we're talking about Cruiser, but to me it matters because anybody who's that good,
right,
at Cruiser, because heavyweight's the glamour historical division with the money, they're going to be at heavyweight. I mean, look, a guy like Breedis, who's a good fighter, he's even talking about it.
That's what I was going to bring up. Is Breedis the best win is Breedis for Usyk? Is that the best win at heavyweight for both of them? Because that's what this guy was saying, basically, that Breedis is better than anything that Holyfield did at Cruiser.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to say that, but I mean, I'm not going to, you know, I mean, I'm certainly not going to put Breedis. I have no problem not doing that. I'm not going to put Breedis over the Dwight Muhammad Cowie that fought Evander Holyfield in the first fight. I mean, you know,
right.
That's not happening.
I agree.
That's not happening. You know, Cowie was a guy that was at the top of the you know, light heavyweight division as well. You know, not going to do that. I mean, Brutus is a good fighter who gave Usyk
quality
close fight.
Yeah.
Quality fighter. I mean, he's proven that to me too. He is a quality fighter. I like how he wants to, and you know, he's got to win at heavyweight. He knocked Char out at heavyweight. Not that Char's great, but it's a win worthy of note. But again, I think he knows it too. I mean, you know, that's where the money is. I mean, I do like what Usyk, whether it's entirely true or not, I like what he says he fights for the glory. I mean, heck, that's honestly part of it, I'm sure, for fighters. I mean, you're in a one-on-one combat sport with thousands of people watching you in person, tens of thousands and millions across the world, literally. So, you know, there's glory to be had there. And of course, it's dangerous. Brutus wants that. I mean, you know, that's why I don't care that much about Alphabet stuff, even at Cruiser, even though Brutus is the champ at Cruiserweight. I mean, like, what I'm getting to is I know they can sell it more if him and Okoli fight at Cruiser, but they both want to go up to heavyweight. I like the glamour division getting the action and any quality fighters that want to get part of the mix. If it were up to me, I'd say, hey, put him as a co-feature at heavyweight on some big heavyweight card. And, you know, let him have a big heavyweight fight against each other for their to move up to the division or something like that. It'd be very interesting. So, yeah. So the answer to the question is, I think for me, you know, you can't say Usyk's better than Holyfield. I know the arguments they want to make, but that still to me comes to what you can do at heavyweight, even though it's not the same weight. So Usyk now has, to me, he's put himself in the conversation. I needed to see what he did Saturday. He did it. So I said that before the fight, and he has done it. So I think now, to me, he's in the conversation, but he's got to do a little bit more at heavyweight for me, the way I look at things, before I'm going to put him on a level of really talking about him being better than Holyfield.
Yeah, and then, you know, some people were putting in title defenses. Some people were saying, oh, the record, opposition record, and that's such a hollow thing to go off the record of people, because as we know, fighters took more losses back in the day anyway, you know, even 20 years, 30, 40 years ago. So they fought more, so they lost more, you know. So to me, to sit there and say, look at the difference in opposition record, though, it's like, yeah, I hear you, but, you know, like, I think Gassiev is a big power puncher, but how many guys did he beat on the way up? Was that undefeated record just have, like, four good names on it? No, it didn't. I'm not saying he fought nobody, but it, you know what I mean? So to do that in the past with the opposition record, I think that usually is a shallow argument.
Yeah, we said it last week, and I'll say it again, because really late in the fight you did see some signs of that, even though he was fighting Joshua, a similar finish in his favor for Usyk. You know, Usyk, he beat Hunter at cruiserweight. That's aged well because, again, on my test, Hunter has proven now he can fight at heavyweight. He had a draw with Povetkin. People say he should have won. I didn't think he won. So, you know, he started real fast. He stung Povetkin. He didn't finish well. So I think he opened the door, and I thought a draw was fair in that one. But I'm just saying, like, I think this needs to be said. I mean, you know, there's Usyk cruiserweight victories that these Usyk fans like to tout that haven't aged all that well either. I mean, Huck was about done. He was basically done when he fought Usyk. Glowacki, you know, lost to Usyk in a decision, got dropped, but, you know, he hadn't done well for since, got blown out by Okoli. Bellew retired after the fight. I mean, he didn't even have another fight after that.
Right.
You know, Gassiev has done nothing since. I mean, I like Gassiev, but you got to go on what it is. Gassiev did not have much of an amateur career. A lot of people don't know that because they just assume, but he's actually one of the guys that he didn't have much of an amateur career.
True.
So he was kind of learning on the job with the pros, power, but he's done nothing since the Usyk fight. I mean, he's fought some just atrocious, was laid off, and some atrocious heavyweight opposition. I mean, you know, those victories that a lot of the people making the arguments for Usyk like to cite, they haven't aged well. They just really haven't. I mean, the Hunter one has.
I think they like the idea of it, too. You know, the World Boxing Super Series, and it's a tournament, and then he did it on the road, and so I get some of that plays into it, you know.
I'm with you. If you want to get into that, I think that's got a lot to do with it, exactly. I mean, you know, there was just some, to me, you know, there was just some nutty takes after the fight, you know, by some of those types of people like you're talking about, you know, Usyk masterclass and, you know, wasn't even touched during the fight. Not even close. And
I mean, those
dominant.
Same people were saying that about Fury in the first fight, a masterclass. It's like, dude, how do you get concussed and that's a masterclass? Come on now.
Yeah, and, you know, Fury gets a pass, and punch stats do show with Fury. I mean, you know, he likes his defense. I mean, which, okay, you know, understandable. You want to be defensively responsible. But, and, you know, even before he hurt Wilder in the rematch, I mean, There's rounds where Fury doesn't, you know, you saw the Klitschko fight. I mean, there's rounds where Fury does nothing. And people, you know, people have given Tyson Fury, this is where I do see some, I'm seeing a little bit of difference in some regions of fans and even some generations of fans on this. I think this is worth bringing out because it does remind me a little bit of, from the way I see it, even some of the Usyk-Joshua fight. I mean, to me, you know, some of these people score pro fights like they learned, you know, watching amateur fights and Olympic fights with the punch counting system. I mean, this is pro boxing. You know, this is not amateur boxing, you know, where I land three jabs and you land two right crosses during the round. And you know, I win the fight because I landed three punches and you landed two. I really, to me, a lot of people score fights like that. I mean, this is pro boxing, you know. I thought Usyk actually, even though other people didn't have it their way, I thought he earned a 10-8 in the last round. I mean, he had Joshua about out, you know, and of course he outpunched him in that round too. But the point is, like, but even though these rounds didn't play out like that necessarily, let's say in the pros you had when Usyk hurt Joshua with one of those left-hand counters that he was landing and buckled his knees. Let's say that was a round in the pros where Joshua was just flicking out a jab throughout the rest of the round. I mean, I'm giving that round to Usyk. You know, it's pro boxing. It's not me counting, you know, Joshua flicking his jab out at you and touching you, you know, with a soft jab. And you know, I think that's sometimes, I think, where people don't get Canelo. I mean, Canelo didn't really have an amateur career. You know, he's all learned the pro style. He's got a good jab, but he doesn't use it much. I mean, he's throwing power punches at you, you know, and a lot of times, you know, Canelo has rounds where he's being cautious, but he's landing good power punches and, you know, maybe the other guy's, you know, landing a few jabs or something like that. I mean, I think he's winning the rounds, you know. I mean, I think it's something worth pointing out because I think that's some of the stuff to me you run into sometimes.
Yeah, I'd agree. Anything else that you'd like to discuss here on the show before we move on?
Probably just, Chris mentioned, I agree with you. I mean, I thought Campbell Hatton got beat up in that fight. I mean, it's kind of a sideshow thing, but I mean, fair is fair. I mean, the Martinez guy got robbed, really. I mean, and Campbell Hatton said he won the fight. I don't see where this sideshow's going. I mean, I really don't. I mean, I don't think it's being too hard. I mean, he's a very young guy, but it's not being too hard on him. I mean, look, we've watched a lot of boxing. I mean, he can't – it's just not unfair. He can't fight. I mean, he can't fight. He's there because of his father's name, and it's not being too harsh because he can't fight. If he could fight, it'd be different. I mean, you know, I mean, as far as it may seem, I thought early in his career, I mean, I thought, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez, it's funny saying it now, but – You know, he proved he could fight. I thought he had potentially a no amateur career, but then he let it go, you know, after the Martinez fight. I mean, Martinez is an excellent fighter who was lineal champ. He almost had him out in the 12th round. What I'm just saying is Campbell Hatton's not getting there, okay? Campbell Hatton's not getting there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not getting there. He's not even getting the Conor Benn level. I mean, you know, he's not – And you know, I think it's a real question how far he's going to go. But you know, he's got where he's beaten some guys who are veteran fighters. So, you know, maybe for where he started out, I'll agree with people who say that's kind of a victory for him. You know, I mean, getting that far, I'm not going to argue with that. But Campbell Hatton's not getting that far. I mean, he can't punch. I mean, he's got no defense. I mean, what is he going to build on? You know, what's he going to build on? And you know, he clearly lost. It's a sideshow, and I don't see where the fans are to blame here who are criticizing him. You know, and people, I don't know really, he's getting this shot because of his father's name. So what's there? I'm in the camp. I don't get the what's there to feel sorry for here for him. And the guy lost the fight, he got a gift. So, you know, it's not fair to the Martinez guy. I mean, and, you know, you're putting him almost in co-main events on these cards.
Yeah, I mean, he's fighting before Callum Smith, you know, like, really? Right? I mean, the guy just fought Canelo, and this guy's fighting before him or after him.
I mean, let's face it. They've been putting him in with all guys with losing records, and they can't even – guys with losing records are styling against him. They're showboating. You know, I mean,
right.
You know,
it's
just really kind of, you know, it's time for, to me, it's become perversely entertaining. I will say that. But just admitting
yeah,
that,
right. Totally.
Admitting
that's
that,
what it turns
you know,
into.
Time,
it turns into like, right. You know, I actually want to see this guy get his ass kicked, you know, like.
That's what it's turning into.
Don't get
so,
us wrong.
I mean, I think,
don't get us wrong, UK fans. We have one here coming up, Muhammad Ali's kid out of nowhere, or nephew, or what is it? Yeah, it's his nephew.
Grandson. We already got
grandson,
this whole thing with Layla.
Grandson, not nephew.
We got one here that's
going to throw in our face, too.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Right, hey, we got Trey Lippy Morrison out there, so, you know. But Trey Lippy Morrison's buried on undercards, and I'll say for him,
exactly.
He didn't have an amateur career either, but when he was – I don't know what went off the rails with him. I never did hear, but, like, you know, he had Roach training him for a while, too. I mean, when he was appearing on Showbox, when he was – I want to say taking it seriously, but I can't say that. I don't have enough information. I don't know what happened. You know, I don't know why he disappeared for that long period of time. But, like, he wasn't looking that bad then, okay? I mean, like,
no.
You know, it was enough where you were like, okay – you know, heavyweight, there's not much American heavyweight stock out there. Yeah, but he just disappeared. And he pops up with Top Rank, new trainers and stuff, and he's got nothing now. I mean, I'll say that. So, yeah, that's a side, you know, it's a sideshow. The Nico Ali Walsh thing's a joke.
Yeah.
Because you know, we already had Lately. We don't need this. This is not really a story. And I don't even want to have to get into the personal details, but even if you know, just knowing, we talked about this a few weeks ago, having read a lot of books on Ali and things like that, and, you know, followed Ali, you know, quite just about my whole life. I mean, you know, I don't, you don't want to be mean, you know, because if he wants to fight, he can fight, but like what really
sure.
was the, what's the relationship even, you know?
Right.
I mean, he is,
right.
Muhammad Ali's grandson. I mean, I understand that, but you know, with let's face it, because it is the truth. You know, with Ali's behaviors, and then you know, having Parkinson's for so long. I mean, what's this about? It's about Bob Arum doing a marketing thing, and you know, that's why he's got Trey Lippy Morrison.
They're shoving
still kicking
it down
around,
our
throat. Yeah, I mean, it's not. Remember. You know, they even with Tommy Morrison, the Duke came from, he was like John Wayne's 10th cousin or something like that. I mean, you know,
it's
been done. Now, Tommy Morrison turned out he could fight, which was good to see with that he could fight. These things, you know, we don't need all these things. But, and I really hate saying this. I mean, then I got it, but I just have to, like, admit it. The Nico Ali Walsh part of the ESPN card gets like 646,000 and beats Franco Bellotti.
Yeah, it beat the highest. And it was in the middle, too. So it wasn't like the lead-in that made it peak,
right.
You know?
That's what I mean. It comes out of the middle. It shoots right up with him to 646. So, you know, Bob Arum has been around forever. He sees that. He says, I'm going to run. I'm going to still go. So
here we go.
But, you know, Hearn doing it with Patton, but it's a sideshow. I mean, you got to,
he's going to be fighting in Louisville, Kentucky. Live in Louisville, Kentucky. Ali Walsh.
You know, it's right. It might be the first time he's been there, but we're going to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
It might be the first time he's been in Louisville, Kentucky, but we might get a card from there. I agree. It's coming. So now it is just as bad. You know, I don't know if Ali Walsh will. I hate to say this, but you got to say it because it's the truth. I don't think he's gonna prove to be as bad as Campbell Hatton. But what does that mean? You know, take it for what it's worth.
That's not saying much. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, that's not really saying anything. But you know, he's probably got a real good chance of being better than Campbell Hatton. But the Campbell Hatton experiment, it really should end. And then Caleb Smith, you don't want to overrate it, but look, Lennon Castillo, he has been durable and he has a punch.
Yep.
He doesn't throw enough punches. That's always been his problem. But, I mean, Callum Smith doing what you've wanted to, you know, you hate that Castillo got hurt that badly, but you know, Callum Smith doing what you wanted to see out of him on his end, use that frame, use that leverage to power punch. And, you know, a very impressive debut with Buddy McGirt training him. You know, he got into the transnational light heavy rankings. I think definitely deserved it. You know, that's what I've wanted to see out of him. I always felt like he was a guy with that frame and looked like he had some pop that was capable of it, but we just didn't see it. Now, you know, now we've got to find out, was that just because he was in with Castillo, or now with McGirt is the potential starting to be tapped where we're going to see more of that? I'm curious, and B-Ball doesn't have opponents, so I'm good for that one. To me personally, I don't need to wait. Let's see Smith and B-Ball and let's see how that goes. I think that might be an interesting fight. They both could use an opponent. Give me that. They're both promoted by Hearn. I don't see a need for the wait, but we'll probably have to wait. But as far as I'm concerned, that one could be next. But
well, they got
to
put them on the same card first. You know, they got to put them on the same card. You got to be a co-feature with them both, and then they'll probably face off. But yeah, I would be down for that fight for sure. Bivol needs something.
Yeah, that.
I mean, this guy's just
wasted
on an island, just chilling, not doing
exactly
anything.
That's what I'm throwing out there now. And then I'll wrap up by just saying, Okoli, he's a guy that in the last two fights, the guy, just got to say it, relatively speaking, I mean, the guy he was in with was terrible on Saturday. I mean, that's – but I thought he – with the lack of activity – and how his improvement, and he had knocked out Golovkin previously. I thought he should be the number one contender to Brites, you know, in transnational. That did end up carrying, so he's number one in transnational. I think he deserves it. I'd like to see him in Brites, and like you and I discussed earlier, I'd even take that at heavyweight. But if they do it at cruiserweight, fine. To me, that would be a good then heavyweight entry for both of them to fight each other. But what I like with Okoli is before the Golovkin fight, the power was real. He convinced me of that. The guy had real power, but he used to wait and take so long to unload with it. He was so cautious, and it just took so long that even with that tremendous power, he was boring. But all of a sudden with Golovkin, he was more aggressive with it, getting out there with the jab, unloading early, and had an early impressive knockout over a guy who was a cruiserweight contender, a legit cruiserweight contender. Then he takes care of business quickly against this guy Saturday. That's two in a row. I like that part of it, though. In other words, he wasn't the old Okoli, even though this guy wasn't that good. When he, you know, like when he sees he's got him overmatched, he's being cautious. He's just tentatively jabbing and waiting. And then, you know, he unloads on this guy in the eighth round or something like that. He didn't do that. He saw the guy shouldn't have been in there with him. Started getting his power off, got him out of there quick. I liked it for that reason. It was what I needed to see. So to me, just like a Callum Smith type situation with who he was in with, the way he took care of that business was very good. I think Okoli, with his power and frame, he seems to me to have a good future at cruiser and beyond cruiser to heavyweight. I'd like to see him get into that heavy mix as soon as possible because he's got the frame and the power. And you know, again, this being the best British heavyweight era already, you know, I'm giving it that. You know, the Americans trying to revive a little, but hasn't been good, of course, in recent decades. We can go that far back. With the Brits, it has been a bit better, but you know, look, Joshua's showing vulnerabilities now. You just got to say it. I mean, they're getting more pronounced. White has been hurt a lot. I think Wallen's got to probably topples White. He's an underdog, but I think he does it. We don't know what's going to happen with Fury and Wilder. Fury's the favorite, but I'm just saying the landscape could suddenly change where maybe the Brits want Okoli in that mix. You know, I think the thought right now is like, well, you know, we've got Fury, we've got Joshua, you know, Joyce, White, you know, where's Okoli fit? Even if he can do it, you know, where's he fit with getting a fight? And I think that's what's crazy because in the old days, that would be good because they'd all be fighting each other. But I know what they mean. Nowadays, you know, they're not going to fight each other. So, you know, it's kind of like a where would he, you know, where could he force a fight with one of those guys? How long would that? But I think, you know, the money's there. Jump in that mix. If I'm Lawrence Okoli, I think he's talked about it. I can get in that mix soon.
All right. Well, I appreciate you stopping in and giving your takes on everything. You have yourself a good night. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Chris. Great talking to you as always. Have a good night.
Yes, sir. Take it easy. Have a good one.
Take care.
All righty. So the other big news today was Manny Pacquiao hanging up the gloves. This was his post here. To the greatest fans and the greatest sport in the world, thank you. Thank you for all the wonderful memories. No, thank you, Manny. This is the hardest decisions I've ever made, but I am at peace with it. Chase your dreams, work hard, and watch what happens. Goodbye, boxing. Just a true legend of the sport, obviously. One-of-a-kind fighter. Good luck trying to find another one like him. Win, lose, or draw, you know he was going to give it, is all. He's so exciting to watch. You know, multiple times he looked, I mean, his Morales loss, I mean, he got knocked out when he was really young before he even came here twice. But that Morales, it was twice, right? At least once. But that Morales loss for him to come back in that, the wars with Marquez, no matter how you scored any of them, besides the last one, of course. That last one, you know, I think the second one was probably the best fight overall, but the last one was, I don't know, maybe that was actually the best fight. Not for Manny, of course, but, I mean, just the legend, true legend, and, you know, him and Floyd, what they did for the sport, crossing it over and becoming that mainstream name, to have both of them like that, battling back and forth and, you know, finally fighting and whatnot. But, yeah, man, it's, you know, definitely, like I said earlier, much appreciation goes out to Manny Pacquiao, legendary fighter. I'm not worried about where people rank him all time and all that. I'm not really too worried about that stuff, really. But phenomenal fighter. You know, I mean, how can you forget the guy's calves are going to be a punchline from here until infinity. But, yeah, thank you. Much appreciated, Manny Pacquiao, man. That was a great career. And like I said, I'm not counting out that he won't come back in some form. But, you know, I wish him good luck in his run to be the president of the Philippines. So, yeah, definitely great. Great, great champion, great, great fighter. You know, when we say, you know, people's champ, I mean, that's a definition. You can Google it, and his face is going to come up, the people's champ for sure. And, you know, for just the smiling killer, you know, like he'll come in the ring just smiling. And then once that bell rings, dude, it's a wrap. It's over. I mean, how many times in a fight did he, you know, especially in the mid to late 2000s when he, you know, hit his hands, hit his gloves, when, you know, he'd just get hit with a good shot, he'd tap his gloves and go right back at it. Man, that run, you know, at featherweight, I I mean, welterweight, he had a great run, don't get me wrong. But that featherweight fights, the amount of the names and all that, you know, and for him to battle through all that, and then, you know, that second Marquez fight, I think, is the first under lightweight, I think it was, because that was 130. I think it's first pay-per-view to go over 400,000 for under lightweight, which was obviously hadn't been seen at that time. So, you know, shots out to Manny Pacquiao for obvious reasons. So many ways. Like I said, truly a one-of-a-kind. As I mentioned, good luck trying to find another Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao. And what a great name, too. Oh, man. Anyway, we've been doing recap a lot. I did kind of forget to talk about that Showbox. The first fight was very competitive. Luis Nunez, you know, outboxed, just completely just overwhelmed. I don't think he won a round. Was it Garnett? So good performance by Luis Nunez. And then also Saul Sanchez, my goodness gracious, over Jericho, was it O'Quinn? First round knockout. Really, really impressive. So we're going to do some current fight news, and then, of course, you know, some boxing Twitter segment and all that. Beterbiev and Marcus Brown, Beterbiev. Against Marcus Brown, it's going to be Top Rank did win the first bid. $1,000,001 is what they won it by. TGB Promotions, for Al Haymon anyway, went $1,001,000 thinking, all right, we'll just put this out there. So that'll probably be on, well, I don't know if it'll be on ESPN. Maybe it'll be on ESPN Plus. I'm not sure. Marcus Brown, you know, where has he been? You know what I mean? So let's see exactly where he's at. You know, that's something I do want to kind of check out. But it's a good fight or whatever. Eddie Hearn has confirmed, this is from Boxing Social's interview, that he's been already approached for the rematch for Usyk and Anthony Joshua in the Middle East. No surprise there. He said his UK remains the first choice, but we'll also consider Usyk's request for Ukraine and look at, you know, the other options financially. What other news is there? Oh, Bob Arum, he told IFL TV. That was funny, dude. Oh, boy. God, I just lost his name. What the hell is his name? Why can't I think of his name? But in the UK, that dude that always wears shades, why can't I think of his name? He always is, like, very poetic when he talks and all that. But he was like, what time is it there in the UK? It's at night, right? He's like, yeah, it's at night. He's like, why the fuck do you got the shades on? That was funny. Anyway, in this interview, Bob Arum proposed to Anthony Joshua's team that, hey, why don't you step aside and let us make Fury and Alexander Usyk for Undisputed. Then, you know, AJ can come back and fight, and then be contractually guaranteed at the shot for all four belts, which is obviously something he's going to say. Roger Gutierrez and Chris Colbert reached terms for a title fight, according to Jake Donovan, avoiding a purse bid hearing. So that's interesting. That was from BoxingScene.com. That happened a little bit ago. Same with this fight. Jaime Munguia versus Gabriel Rosado finalized on the zone November 13th. I like that fight. That's going to be a good fight. I'm all about that fight. I think that's a really good fight, actually. Joe Smith Jr., unfortunately, not that the fight was anything great, but I think it was his mandatory, if I remember correctly, but maybe I'm wrong with that. But either way, he was going to fight a guy that, who knows, maybe the guy would give him a good fight. He's got a good record. A lot of people are just kind of anticipating him and Danny Jacobs fighting, but he was supposed to make the first defense. This was on Boxing Scene a little while ago, the WBO, you know, belt at light heavyweight. He had to withdraw because he got COVID, and he actually is hospitalized. So it's obviously sometimes COVID, you know, doesn't do much to you. Sometimes it does a whole lot to you. So hopefully he's recouping. In its place, Zapata and Vargas, Josue Vargas and Jose Zapata. That's ESPN Plus October 30th. So that'll be the new main event. That's going to be from Madison Square Garden's Hulu Theater, which is a cool-ass venue. So, you know, it is what it is. You know what? There's been all sorts of – here's some news. Per sources, this is a while back. Someone sent me this text. Holyfield Belfort did 150,000 pay-per-views, both linear and digital, which would make it a massive money loser. This is Dan Raphael. 150,000 would gross 7.5, which, you know, obviously with the purses and whatnot, he says, you know, isn't going to cover it, but there's really no surprise there. Oh, this whole Triller thing. You know, now we've heard, we heard last week and a while ago now, probably 10 days ago, that, we heard the rumors that they're going to change it because Monday Night Football. And I think I went on a rant last week, if I remember correctly, that, you know, and Teofimo even said, well, you know, we didn't want to do Monday Night. You know, it's like, dude, you already knew Monday Night Football was on. It's October, dude. Like I said last week, once it's mid-September and the NFL starts, every freaking Monday night they have a Monday Night Football game. So there's really no excuse for that. And then on top of that, they were going the same week as Wilder Fury. It's just, that didn't make any sense. But they're waiting now on Kambosos. They're waiting on him to sign a contract because he's like, dude, what's going on here? You know, you need to do something about this. You know, like I'm, but he hasn't agreed to change the date from October 4th to October 16th. You know, and he's actually filed, you know, for the, to the IBF to Triller's bid because, you know, it's been so long. In that event, basically, Triller put up $1.2 million after the purse bid that required 20%. That money would be split between Lopez Kambosos 65-35 if Triller defaults, you know, if the IBF actually defaults on him. So there is some talk about that. You know, that's what he's looking to do now because he's like, well, dude, you know, you can't, like I said, imagine trying to make weight with this stuff. So, and they've already, you know, they already had to pay $100,000 for the rental fee for the MSG Theater. It sounds like they got some more money in a settlement anyway from them. So that, it's just been a mess, dude. But, it, you know, Teofimo made it sound like he wasn't going to do it. But then he's like, ah, I'm good. You know, I might as well make this kind of money. As we know, it goes down from... It goes down to Matchroom for DAZN, and then it would go to Top Rake. And Top Rake, just in case, technically does have that date set for it, just in case. This is Teofimo on Twitter. He says, yo, this hoe Kambosos don't want to sign the contract for the new date. All that talking, he don't want to fight now. Man, somebody get this boy so I can finish what he thinks he started. October 16th, sign the dotted line, your biggest payday, or you're out. He says $2 million. He'd probably still get his biggest payday if it went down to the Hearn thing. But either way, we'll see. I mean, I'm assuming that he's going to, but it sounds like he's asking for an extra $300,000 because of all this bullshit. He's playing hardball. I don't mind that, you know. It's like you might as well play hardball when this shit's been all over the place, dude. It's definitely not his fault. this is actually a funny. We'll just start the bot. I think that's about it for. Oh, there was some news, well, somewhat news that Malik Scott said that Wilder's expected to come in 235 or 240, and I know he's had time to put on the weight more naturally because, you know. What was it? February 2020 was the last time they fought. But man, 240 seems like too much. You know what I mean? Yeah. Okay, here's the boxing Twitter segment, then we'll get out of here. Sources, this is chain-smoking penguin. Sources, Teofimo Lopez versus George Kambucha is now confirmed for October 12th at Madison Square Garden instead of Barclays and will feature a versus between Jay-Z and Tupac, who will be dropping a new live album. I thought that was kind of funny. Oops. Let this be a sobering reminder to all you prick boxing trolls out there who give fighters shit and call them cowards and quitters. This is the type of bad shit they go through for our entertainment. I kind of think he was talking about that knockout. Someone actually just sent me that not long ago, so I'm not totally sure. Tyson, oh, here we go. And this is some of this Usyk stuff here in the boxing Twitter segment. And don't get me wrong, I think, you know, Usyk is a very talented fighter. He had a great performance. But some of these folks just go way over the top now. Tyson's Fury inactivity has made it so Usyk is the real heavyweight champ. Remember, if you start in 2018 for Usyk, before this fight this last weekend, he had only fought twice in a three-year period. So then all of a sudden he gets a win, and now all of a sudden, if Wilder beats Fury, he's avoiding Usyk like the plague. You can't make this stuff up. Fury is a very hard matchup, obviously, for anybody at the division, especially Wilder. And he's shown he can outbox on the outside. To an extent, anyway, he did get knocked down twice and almost knocked out. But still, he showed he could win a ton of rounds. And then he showed after the first couple rounds that he's just going to go in there on the inside and rough him up. But to sit there and say now he's going to be afraid of Usyk when he just got his ass kicked and he's taking on Fury again, the guy who kicked his ass, it's just like, come on, dude. Joshua should be commended for accepting the challenge because he didn't have to take this fight. Let's put some respect on AJ's name. Virtually 99% of modern prize fighters in his position would have avoided this fight. And this is the tweet I want to read that in response to this. Joshua took a mandatory against an opponent. He was heavily favored. He was favored, not heavily. And he lost. Is this boxing writer ignorant of that, or is he trying to misrepresent what happened? And it's true. It's like for him to say 99% of these people wouldn't have taken on this fight, you know, in champions. Like, dog, what are you talking about? And that's Montero, which no surprise here because he's the one who actually, I shouldn't just blame him. Multiple people were already on that. Nope. This was his tweet, Montero. The why Usyk is the greatest cruiserweight of all time, not Holyfield threat. Usyk, 16 fights. 6 title defenses, 1 undisputed, all on the road. 18 fights, 5 title, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes on to say a variety of other things. I think, I do think, like what we said earlier, that I don't think Brutus is better than the wins that Holyfield had at cruiserweight. I don't care about record of opposition, because that is such an open-ended thing. But, you know, Dwight Muhammad, Carlos De Leon, I mean, these guys are damn good cruiserweight fighters in general, historically speaking. And Holyfield knocked them out both, you know what I mean? So I just don't see that. And now to just jump the gun, it's funny because at least they're doing this now and not what they did with Golovkin, how some of these guys were putting Golovkin in there with, you know, on the same level of Hagler and Hopkins when he hadn't even beat anybody yet at a high level. You know, and they also didn't worry about the interim titles and the regular fake champ titles in the title defense because it went with their narrative, right? But so at least Usyk did establish himself as a great fighter today, but it's just so funny because a lot of times when someone takes a loss, like when Loma takes a loss, Montero's covering for his ass. saying anywhere from 8-4 to 6-6 is like the only acceptable scorecard. So 6-6 is an acceptable scorecard? But then he goes on to say, like I've mentioned multiple times, that there's two swing rounds. Well, okay. So why are you swinging them both to Loma? Like and it just so happens to be, and this actually leads into the next tweet, which this is actually what a lot of it is, to be honest with you. I mean, it just seems like that. I'd say there's a big contention of Americans that favor Eastern Bloc fighters much more than their own American fighters, and a lot of them just happen to be MAGA, though. Which, yeah, that does blend in. It does blend in. I love all fighters from everywhere, but it is funny how, you know, Golovkin can be put with Hagler in Hopkins before he even has been a lineal champ, you know? It's ridiculous. 20 years since Hopkins ruined Tito. Who would have thought years later Trinidad would be labeled as a blown-up welterweight by people who didn't start watching boxing until Matchroom delivered prize fighting, a superb victory. It was a damn good victory. He was an underdog, too, by the way. Now, was middleweight his best weight? No, of course not. I'm talking about Trinidad. Oh, why? Oh, this is actually why Tyson Fury pay-per-view broadcast is starting early, 7 p.m. Miami time, so 7 time Eastern? It isn't. 7 Eastern would be 6 Central. I know for a fact that pay-per-view starting at 8 o'clock Central, which would be 9 o'clock. I think you're talking about maybe the prelims, but the pay-per-view's not starting at that time, just so you know. Okay, boxing has become a joke, yet another robbery tonight. This is what they're talking about on the AJ side, so some of them. Not many of them, but some of them are clear fanboys, obviously. Joshua was the aggressor the entire fight, besides possibly, not fully, but possibly, round 2, round 7, round 11, and round 12, I honestly struggled to give Usyk another round. So he's saying possibly these 4 rounds, but I couldn't give many others. So it has to be at least 8-4, and it could be 9-3. He basically threw pity-pat, no power left. So why was Joshua buzzed and hurt and stood up multiple times? Almost the whole fight, Joshua walked through them and landed at will with his jab. If anything, he was getting countered at will with the right hand, the right cross with his jab. How the judges have robbed the legitimate heavyweight champ just so Fury can be given an excuse to fight Wilder for a 4th time is disgusting. Boxing is a choke sport. This is why the UFC, Jesus. To walk away and think that's an 8-4 to Usyk is just, to Joshua. Here's Sergio Mora. The fine print on Wilder's contract and the fine boxing Usyk by Usyk have now undisputedly altered heavyweight championship history. Well, that happened before it, though. And that's another thing. We keep talking about this Joshua Fury. Joshua just lost. Ruiz knocked him all over the ring. Like, I get it. You want the 4 belts together. But if it's all about the 4 belts, then it shouldn't matter if it's the biggest fight that'll be crazy in the UK or not. You know what I mean? Like, if Wilder and Joshua would have fought, I still would have said you still got to fight Fury again. Or you still got to fight Fury. And it's just crazy. It's like, here we go again. And I love the heavyweight division because there's been these upsets. You know what I mean? And these guys aren't as great as it was in the 80s and 90s and 70s and all that. I'm not worried about all that stuff. I enjoy what's right in front of me. But to sit here and be like, oh, man, now it'll never be the same. It goes back to the 4 King because someone lost. And now it's not going to be the same fight because they lost. Okay, so the 4 Kings, once Sugar Ray Leonard lost to Duran in the first fight, are we just supposed to cancel all these other round-robin fights that we got? They wouldn't have even been the 4 Kings if it wasn't for that, all these fights to take place. I mean, it just gets ridiculous at some point. Why did we even need to see the rematch then between Leonard and Durant? You know, why do we even need to see Leonard and Hearns then? Because, I mean, you know, Leonard already lost, bro. You know, and it didn't happen at the right time. It should have happened earlier, you know. It's like, Doc, what are you talking about, dude? You shouldn't have even been that anticipating it because it wasn't going to fucking happen. Fury Joshua will now go down as another mega fight in boxing that never happened when it should have. Dude, maybe it's a mega fight at the box office. Maybe it's not as just crazy as fight as you thought it was. It's a great fight. I still want to see it, you know? But it's just funny, dude. Like, I say I don't understand these guys, but I do. I do understand them. I understand why they think this way, because it's so current. It's so this. Some of them are trolling, I'm sure. Some of them are just so fanboyish and just stuck to just, I don't know, like, but this is like Sergio Mora, dude. You know, it's just ridiculous, dude. Like, the fight would still sell out a goddamn stadium in the UK, dude. You know? And it's not because they didn't make that fight. Like, oh, dude, they've been ducking each other or someone's been ducking each other. No. That's not how it was. They weren't why can't we get the other? Why aren't you going for Fury and Usyk now? Usyk hasn't been beaten. He's undefeated. He beat Joshua. Oh, are you going to get mad at Joshua because there's a contractual agreement? You going to get mad at Usyk? Or are you going to get mad at Joshua then because he's going to say, I want the rematch like Wilder did? Of course he won't say that shit. Because, you know, but Joshua's tied to DAZN. He's going to be anyway, probably. Or Eddie Hearn, at least. So it just gets so old, dude. I know I'm probably an idiot, but I'm starting to buy this BS that Deontay Wilder is selling about working on his skills, developing a new game plan, and I'm beginning to think Wilder Fury 3 may be pretty competitive. You know, if he shows all these new skills or even half of them, and just is more active. If he's just not looking for the right hand, I think it will be more competitive if he's not looking just for the right hand. And if he doesn't get hit, you know, in the side of the head and mess up his equilibrium either. Because that first fight, first two rounds, Wilder did land some good punches. So even go back and look at the first fight. It was competitive within the rounds. Of course, Fury won probably 9 clean rounds, or at least for sure 8, easily. It wasn't just a 10-2, though, I'll say that. Over the past, I've heard that Shakur Stevenson beats Floyd Mayweather at their best, beats Prime Casazu at 140, is definitely better than Alexia Aguayu, and also comprehensively beats Josh Taylor. Why the fuck am I still here on this app? That's kind of funny. Okay, this is someone sent me this. This is a response to Montero. But Montero made the best point on his pod. Canelo gave Plant his biggest demand. It had to be a PBC fight. Canelo gave Plant his biggest demand. It had to be a PBC fight? PBC? This is from October, or August 1st, by the way. They had to fight on Fox. If Plant was open to fighting on other platforms, who knows how much ESPN, DAZN, and Triller would have offered. DAZN did offer. See, this is... if he said this, now I didn't hear Montero's podcast. This is a tweet of someone saying this is what he said on it. Now, Canelo saying Plant had to be on Fox, that's weird. But Eddie Hearn came out and said they made an offer from DAZN to Canelo. So that just makes no fucking sense whatsoever. But, you know, that's Montero. You know, that doesn't surprise me. I don't even get that. I'm lost on that one. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. There's not much going on this weekend. Obviously, we have a big trilogy fight. Fury and Wilder coming up with that undercard is the bomb. So anyway, I'm going to get out of here. And hopefully we get some surprise top 10 fight of the year or something. You know, who knows? This weekend, somebody just sends me something. I watch it and I'll recap it. But yeah, there's not a whole lot going on this weekend. But I'm going to get out of here. Enjoy what you can enjoy, whether that's some fights or life or whatever. We'll be back next week. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, or the bullshit, the whole bag, and when you become the world champion, you're like, you know what, I made it. I'm going to show you it's this. So I'm going to get any dollar worth.